Log Talk Radio.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? It's that time. We're live on a Wednesday, the actual day that we always say. You know, we're adjusting, you know, podcast, radio is different nowadays. It's called a different term, but it's Wednesday. We're live talking to you. Me and the fellas, I don't know if Wayne's going to be able to call in because he happens to live in one of the areas that's very hard hit, that has been hit hard by this outbreak of the coronavirus. And I got my brother Byron Saunders back with us again. I'm Citizen Payne. I'm sorry. This is the Kay Thompson Live Show. My mom is on assignment in heaven with my cousin Kim and my sister Gina and many other relatives. I have to say today and talk about my cousin Kim. It's 2 years since she passed, rather unexpectedly. And I just want to say those words to her that I love her and her family members, her son and her brother, my little cousin, you know, like many of us, many of you guys, we grew up as cousins, but also as sisters and brothers, you know, extended sisters and brothers. That's how tight my family grew up with my first cousins. Even some of my extended cousins, once we, you know, find out, you know, and get around them and we're all able to be together, we have a strong connection. And many of you that might know about my family on my father's side and the work that my uncle has done and many family members that are in the public service, all of us are tight. And so to the memory of my cousin Kim, who really was the closest to our grandmother and my mother, my mother's mother, her mother's mother, who whose name to us is synonymous with just love. We all just called her mother. And I'm sure many of you that feel the same way about your grandmothers and parents and family, you know, can relate. And my prayers and blessings go out to people who have lost loved ones. And that's really kind of a connection to tonight's show, right? We all want our people to be healthy. And we have an individual in the White House who chooses to lie and put people's lives at risk rather than stand up and do the right thing. And that's because this guy is really selfish and about himself. We're going to get into it. You know, the World Health Organization has declared the coronavirus officially a pandemic. And during all this time, this guy has chosen to lie. I'm not going to say he's misspoke. I'm not going to say he misled like everybody continues to try to do. I hear too much. He's a liar. He lies for his own purposes. And this is not the first time that he's been willing to let people die, obviously, right? And we know what happened with Charlottesville, his words of people being nice on them, good people on both sides. And also, too, some of the things he would say about some people that he didn't like and would tweet these very harsh statements about people, trying to incite some of the less, let's say, grounded in reality supporters of his to do and commit violence. That's what you do when you say certain things, when you know people out there. When you say a phrase like, somebody ought to do something, kind of reminds you of one of those old lynching parties. Somebody ought to do something. And so what he happens is, what he hopes is that somebody will do something, but then stand back and say, I didn't tell him to do it. That's just my opinion. I'm going to bring in my brother Byron Saunders, the legendary historian, and he's down there in the midst of what they call the swamp, but didn't become the swamp until Trump got down. Now, brother Byron, what's going on?
Well, we're here in the cesspool. Because the swamp, remember, is ecologically a place of creation. And I'm going to go down the road a little bit on the cesspool moment, because you're right. He's been lying to us, over 16,000 lies since he's taken office. And you remember Peter and the wolf, the boy who called wolf. And when the wolf came in and he finally cried, nobody was paying attention. And unfortunately, as much as we have had an impeachment trial for abuse of power, obstruction of justice, I consider complicity in the act of not allowing us as citizens to know the condition of our country's health as much an impeachable offense as anything else created. And I'm going to take it personally because, as you may recall, when I got back from Lackland Air Force Base for my son's graduation,
right,
8 weeks of the Air Force National Guard, it was an incident at the base in which his mother had made reservations to save money on the base and was staying in a motel close to the airport and was supposed to move the next day on base. Well, they canceled her reservation overnight while she was there, and the reason was, as we found out by way of hearsay, that there were coronavirus quarantine victims coming onto the base. And the question she asked, did you cancel my reservation because of the quarantine of coronavirus victims? And the answer was yes. Now imagine, I went down there, Eric, with
how long ago was that?
Overcoming, that was a month ago. I went down
thank
there
you
on February 12th, 13th, and 14th. And the day before I went down there, I was still overcoming the flu. I almost canceled my trip because of that's how sick I was. And then to be subjected at ground zero to the potential of a pandemic virus without information being served to the thousands of people who were there on the base for their graduation of their sons and their daughters, you know, no official acknowledgement. And then to come back to Washington, D.C., the seat of my government, to be informed a month later, not by the president, but by a national news story where the base commander at Lackland Air Force Base was on national TV news a month later confirming that he had corona quarantine victims on the base. That's why I say I take this personally.
Yes.
Because that's jeopardizing my life, my son's life, the sons and daughters of 750 of his classmates in that training session who have taken an oath to protect and serve the Constitution of the United States, and thank them for their service. And here we have our commander-in-chief who cannot give us the information straight. It's time for him to go, and I call that treason. That's a treasonous act. And worse,
you mean another one?
That's right. Another one worse than obstruction of justice, worse than abuse of power, because he's supposed to be protecting us.
Right.
We get no protection. And that's the insanity that's going on in our country right now. And then because I'm positive that the reason why the World Health Organization delayed its calling this a global pandemic was because of the president of the United States, the most powerful office in the world, who said, getting on television, oh, this will be over shortly, nothing to be panicking about. It's 60 million people in the country of Italy are in lockdown right now. Their borders are shut. And you still up here playing politics and games with our lives in this country? That's unacceptable, and they got to be called out for it because if the incompetency in that office stems from the White House through the administration and including the GOP, who are tacitly playing along with this game and playing politics with our lives, and they all need to be called out on the carpet of this.
Yeah, we got Brother Wayne here. Wayne can give us a little update. Let's bring Wayne Gilman in. I didn't know that he was going to be able to call. Brother Wayne Gilman, the legendary newsman. How you doing, Wayne?
All right. I hope this line holds up because I'm on cell, and I'm at the epicenter of where all the unhealthy activity is taking place. I'm still astounded by it. You know, I wasn't able to hear the beginning of the program, but, you know, obviously, the coronavirus is really off the charts, and it's taking over the news cycle, legitimately so, and it's affected everybody, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what, you know, the thing that really gets to me, I have all sorts of conspiracy theories. You know, we live like fewer than 100 miles from Plum Island off Long Island, and somebody could have, you know, released an experiment that we need not, you know, be a part of at this point in our lives with an unstable character in the White House. You know, could have been that. You know, I know the origin is supposed to be somewhere in China, and thankfully so, they're getting over it, seems, to a certain extent, or they have it under control. But, you know, listening to what the medical authorities were saying before Congress today, we're in for a long haul here in this country. And again, I go back to all these cuts that the administration conducted with the CDC in particular, FEMA, and all the other institutions that they feel are not necessary. And they didn't plan this. And then they politicized it, you know? And then we have a guy who shakes hands with someone who is suspiciously affected, and for some reason he feels he's immune from getting anything, and he wants everyone to follow his example. I mean, it's just amazing, because the thing that really gets to me is that the gentleman, the lawyer who lives in this area here, but just above me, was taking the same railroad train that I was taking into Manhattan around the time that he was first feeling ill. They said February 22nd he had gone into the hospital. Who's to say that I wasn't sitting next to him where he was, you know, coughing and wheezing, you know, before any of this did that? You just don't know how many people he might have affected, you know, whether it was in public transportation. I know the Jewish community in which he lives in, and the synagogue he's a part of, is close-knit. So that I understand, you know. But everything else, it's just amazing. And I hope that they come up with something fast enough, but I'm not as optimistic as some, you know. I think we're going to be in this for at least another year or so before they really get this under control.
Well, they said that probably it's going to be about 18 months. That was what Finucci or whatever his name is said in that press conference, where Trump said it might go away. And then Finucci gets up 5 minutes later, and they're all standing there and said, "Well, you know, it's a little bit longer." So
right.
What we have, you know, we're not getting any accurate information from this guy to be the kindest about it. Like I said earlier, he's a liar and he lies about everything. So there's no reason to believe that he is going to be straight with us. He's supposed to address the nation tonight, but this man is incapable of telling the truth. And
right.
His whole perspective about the world is how it affects him and his people. And he's about making his money. You know, he still is worried about the financial aspect of it. I saw an article here on AOL, which was posted by the HuffPost, where it says the title of it is "Trump Campaign Chief is Funneling Pay to Eric Trump's Wife and Don Jr.'s Girlfriend."
Oh, yeah.
And that's from the Huffington Post, dated the 10th of March. So this is just more of their graft, more of their corruption. I was watching a program on MSNBC the other day where they had John Brennan on, I believe, was when he was Obama's cabinet. And he was talking
national
about
security.
He was put in charge. Say it again, national security?
He was head of his national security effort, yeah.
Right. So he was talking about how when the Ebola crisis hit, that President Obama – deferred to the health experts, and also that when President Obama also put in a program from then on to help deal with pandemics, which the Trump administration dismantled when they came in. So, and also, you know, we know the cuts that he's been making to the NIH and the CDC and things like that, that him and his Republican Walking Dead zombies have decided to do. But it's just interesting, you know, just a couple of days before, it's poetic justice to me that Matt Gaetz, the very Weisenheimer congressman from Florida, who likes to engage and try to be confrontational with a lot of people when he wore the gas mask on the House floor, and how what poetic justice it is for him to report just not even a week later that he might have been exposed to the virus because he was being, this is what happens when God don't like ugly, when you're trying to make little of something or make fun of something, that's what happens to you. And isn't it ironic how not only he, but the other couple of Republicans that were the main ones pushing a lot of this negativity and the things that they're doing, the other one from Georgia was also exposed to it. And like you said, Wayne, we have a president who might have been exposed to it because he was on the plane, but still shaking people's hands, still putting people's lives in danger because he doesn't care or he doesn't understand. I'm not even going to try to think that he understands anything because I believe he's a liar. I believe he's a criminal, you know, and you guys know when he first got elected how I would say I didn't really believe he was a racist, right? You remember that I would say, well, I think he does racist things, but I've come to believe that now because we can only assume that and come to that conclusion by your actions and the things that you do and the people that you hang with. Yeah, and we've got this guy, Ron Johnson, and he's worse than that. We're not going to use those words.
It gets even worse than that with the optics of the racism that's being implied here. Now, this just happened March 10th, 2020. Congressman Mark Meadows, the new chief of staff, tweeted out that morning calling the coronavirus the Chinese virus. This is nothing but an effort to demonize the virus as a specific to a race, like calling Obamacare as code for nigger care. This is despicable. It's a disgusting act and form of racism that must be called out as such. You know, the congressman needs to be censored for his comments and put on a notice that his comments and any others from emanating from the administration are unacceptable, will not be tolerated under any circumstances for injecting a particular racial fear into the public domain. Now, check this out. It was on March 10th, 2015, during the midterm elections, that the Ebola scare virus was a distraction to place fear into white American voters that this and as a threat to our national security. Y'all may remember that. Wayne, you're the news man. And all this translated to people voting Republican and most voters staying home and refusing to participate in voting and to acknowledge the Democratic Party and President Obama's successes as worthy of its votes. And remember the picture of President Obama hugging the nurse from Texas who survived her ordeal with Ebola. That meant in a subliminal notion that this was a black disease and that the president was responsible for how it got to America. And all this was orchestrated by the Koch brothers and their operatives who did everything to suppress voter turnout, and it worked. The turnout number was 27%. Was the lowest turnout in the history of the voting of the United States. And this is out of the playbook of the Russian hacking to pit our race against each other. And we don't need the Russians anymore. We got the current administration who's profiling Chinese. Imagine that. And here's something else to consider, guys. The $22 trillion deficit that our country has ribbed up, you know who we owe most of that deficit to? China. That's right.
You know, also we're talking also really, let me just throw out while you're in the middle of your thing, is that Mark Meadows, you know, let's call him a racist because you say racist stuff. Because they had to work together. But Mark Meadows is also the one who said he wanted to send Barack Obama back to Kenya. So, enough said. And as I'm looking at the TV now, I see Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington. Trump called him a snake just last week in the middle of this epidemic. So this guy can't, you know, they say he's having a problem getting his mind wrapped around the fact that he's going to have to sit down with Nancy Pelosi to talk about the things he wants to do. This man is incapable of any emotion, apparently, of any empathy towards other people. Clearly, he can't get out of himself if you look the way he's walking. I mean, just look at his body language. I mean, we as actors understand when you watch somebody, you observe them, you can get a pretty good assessment of where they're coming from, right? So look at his body language. Look how he wants to put Pence in charge of this. Because I said this today with some people, what he's going to do, if it gets much worse, he's going to try to use that as a way to jettison Pence off of his ticket and get another VP candidate. Because Joe is getting ready to whip his butt. But normally, Trump wants to be the center of focus. He wants to be the guy giving the press conference, right? Didn't you just see the other day when he was just sitting there and let Mike Pence to do all the talking? He was just sitting there like, that's not him.
And he's got,
right?
And he was commended, not Trump, mind you, I didn't mean to cut you off, but Pence was commended by bipartisan calls from both sides of the aisle about his handling of this crisis, to a certain extent. Doesn't mean that he's absolved of any of the nonsense that goes on, because as long as he's supporting, the head person in charge, that's just how it's going to be. But the bottom line is that he's not grandstanding. He's not acting like as if he's out of his mind. And that's it. I mean,
Fiducci should be the one, should be the face, should be the guy talking about it. The doctor should be the one. The doctor should be the
exactly.
one leading the press conference and talking about it. You don't have the politicians. They're trying to control the message. They're trying to control the flow of information. That's why they said, come to us before you release any information.
I agree. I agree. I mean, these are the authorities, But if you're going to parrot, have somebody who is, at least give the appearance like as if they have some sort of modicum amount of civility, as opposed to where it should be coming from. Because he's such a megalomaniac, it's about him. Everything is about him. And as far as I'm concerned, yesterday's pushback by the Democrats and what happened the week before, the Super Tuesday, where Biden, this is just indicative of what's coming. The momentum has to stay, and we got to get Eastern Parkway Bernie off the map.
Okay, Eastern Parkway Bernie, okay. We're not really going to go right there just yet, brother. Back up a little bit. Pump the brakes. Okay.
Okay, sorry.
We need to come together and win an election. we need to come together.
I didn't mean to be offensive.
Right.
Well, one thing is certain about the stock market and this virus, and here's where we have to really understand who is getting affected by this, because when Pence was made the current czar of health, he and his crisis management team, under the advice of the president, delayed in announcing because of the virus affecting mostly seniors, to put a ban on seniors' air travel and traveling. Now, imagine this. How many trillions of dollars did we just lose in the last 3 weeks? Wiped off the board. Who said affecting mostly? It ain't affecting me. I'm still in the same poor condition that I was at the start of the week, as I was the week before, the week before. But it is affecting those 401ks. And who's on these cruise ships? Who's taking these vacations? Senior citizens.
Exactly.
So
they're
the
populace.
That's exactly right. And when you take that amount of money and it's wiped off the board and out of their 401ks and out of their savings accounts, and then you come on the scene as commander-in-chief and say, we're going to give you a tax break in your payroll taxes. That ain't nothing, y'all. That is absolutely nothing, because the payroll taxes are not what's keeping a family alive. And you're right, Wayne, when we get back to the election talk, who's most concerned about this right now? It's women who are feeding their families, who are worried about getting their child to the hospital, who is worried about these food stamps, who's worried about who's going to take care of their kids while you're making sure everybody doesn't show up at work. Trickle-down effect is major, and giving a tax break in terms of payroll tax, That's like throwing crumbs at, you know, at a frenzy in a party of hungry people. That's not going to do anything. You better extend unemployment. You better have some EBT, what you call it, food stamps available and ready on demand, because at the point in which none of that is payroll tax won't give a damn in terms of helping a family out who now has to deal with daycare, food, rent, mortgage, health. None of that's on your payroll tax anyway, and the amount that you're taking out for Medicare doesn't come back to you until you're 67, 65. So how's that going to help us out? See, this is where the optics of what's is really about to happen, and it is already happening. The blue wave is in effect as we speak, and people are sick and tired of the lies. I mean, he's given us over 16,000 lies since he's been in office. Come on. At what point do you say, stop it?
So, Byron, break down the payroll tax, how that works, because a lot of people
because
I'm sure
the payroll
don't understand.
Tax, right, fight payroll. If you're taking out the most taxes on your income to go towards, hopefully, a refund during the tax season, because if you don't take out enough, Uncle Sam gets you. You're going to end up owing. So now you're going to reduce the payroll tax and hopefully put more income back into the hands of the citizen. Well, you know what? Johnny come lately on that is that already we're into 3 months of a pandemic out and nothing has been happened. He hasn't even signed that as an executive order. So by the time it's signed into executive order, we're into April, May, second quarter of the year, and you're talking about giving us a break? There's no break in that.
So in other words, you're saying even the extension of the tax deadline does not mean anything, basically.
No, it's not giving you nothing.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I did hear about that. I didn't follow up on it, but I thought he was going to come up with some definitive plan to help businesses first, and then that was going to be like ancillary to his recovery package. But, you know, again, it's not like an Obama bailout that was well thought of. It's just, let me just throw something and hope it sticks.
Yeah. That's basically it. And it won't stick because by the time he gets to whatever he's going to say to us tonight, it's already a day late and $10 short. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And they think you can throw money at everything. And they got 700 vacancies at CDC. The very people who are supposed to
be doing
the research and development on a health issue as serious as this, and there's nobody there to do this. Now, I can't blame all this on Trump, but I will blame the conservative Republican initiative. You and I and Wayne, collectively, we've heard every year since we've been on this earth and been aware and conscious of a conservative movement to reduce government. We got too much government, too many employees.
Yeah.
Oh, well, now guess what? Now you need the government, don't you? You don't have the employees.
No.
You don't have the infrastructure. You don't have anybody to do the research because you put a freeze on everything. You run everybody out of office, and the people that you put into a Secretary of Health and Human Services, as Secretary of HUD, you got Dr. Ben Carson, who's more should be on the team of the at least the crisis management for health, running health and urban development, housing and urban development, totally incompetent. And every one of his secretaries and undersecretaries are completely incompetent to run the federal government. Now this is the initiative that you all have been running on, and on one end he's saying, well, we're going to give you stimulus money here and tax breaks here, but in essence, don't pay attention to the magic game on the three-card Monte game, because on the flip side of that, he's cutting Social Security, he's cutting health benefits, he's cutting everything that we need socially to address this issue right now, and he's giving more money to the military to build a wall that can't keep out a taco. You know what I'm saying? And now he wants to you know, he's increased the military budget, and for what purpose? To give more guns and armament to the world. That's it.
You know, that's big business, right? I mean, the military budget, obviously. It's big
65%.
Business. 65%. As it relates to the Social Security and entitlements, which they always try to act as if it's such a big burden, you know, we know that they give better. The $1 trillion tax cut that they gave to the top 1% is way more than what you could do for the entitlements. It's called entitlements for a reason. You're entitled to do that. You pay into the system your whole life. That was the agreement that the government makes. You're entitled to that. So when they try to make it as if it's something negative, you know, we know that. And what we want people to understand is that that's the BS component of it when they talk about entitlements. And we know that they've been doing that since the 60s, trying to cut back on all of those social programs that have been put in place. So their argument about, you know, the budget and all, it's all false when you know, for us that really know what's going on and really know how to play the three-card money game, right? So we know that there's BS in what they're talking about. And it's just kind of unbelievable. I want to shift kind of towards the, title of the show. We talked about Joe's big night on Tuesday, what your guys' assessments are. You know, last week I talked about why I think Bernie is a little bit disingenuous in some of the things he does, of course. And there was a good thread on a friend of mine's Facebook page that a lot of people were discussing that too. And I pointed out the same things that I pointed out last week's show, was that while Bernie's ideas are revolutionary, and many of them are what, you know, people were talking about back in the day in terms of revolution, the status of the country, you know, the structure of the country, the system that we live under is a capitalist system. That's what this country is, right? That's what everybody buys into. Now, we know there's socialism within and there's democratic socialism within there, or apparently there's rich people, Republican socialism, because, you know, all the corporations getting the money, that's kind of a certain amount of socialism. But my point is that word turns people off. Bernie's of that generation. Mm-hmm. He knows that when he was talking that stuff, he was talking in 1973, they shouted him down. His whole generation. Shut up, Bernie. We don't want to hear about that. You're a commie. So now, and while he's talking about we need a whole new system, that's what the Black Panthers, that's what black people have been talking about. We need a new system because this system that's based on racism, based on the enslavement of Africans, it needs to be a new system. So right on, Bernie, for that. But here's the thing about that, bruh. You know it ain't going to happen, right? Or you know it's going to be a long way coming. So why do you keep selling that bill of goods? And right when black people become firmly established within the establishment of the Democratic Party, he's talking about he's running against the establishment of the Democratic Party. That's problematic for me. It's problematic for me that he has this mentality that, well, we can get it done, yada, yada, and you're feeding our young people a bill of goods because young black people got a different walk of life than young white people, right? It's just a matter of fact. That's just what it is. And we could all have the best intentions in the world, but should you lose that day, if we put all our chips behind you, you're going to say, well, we'll get them next time, and we still fought the good race. But those black and brown people still going to catch hell and probably going to catch more hell should this guy get another 4 years. And then you guys are going to have the luxury of waiting out another 4 years. Now, there's white people that know that. You know, there's white people that understand that for black people it's much worse. America catches a cold, we catch pneumonia. So what he's doing is disingenuous to act like and get all our young people riled up. The system is not for us. We have black people who died for this system. Fannie Lou Hamer got beat up to be recognized, to become a part of the establishment.
That's right.
And this guy's going to come and talk about, I'm running against the system. When you could walk back to I'm glad Bloomberg said this is ridiculous. The one thing, the thing about Mike said, you're a socialist, you got three homes. You're a millionaire, you got three homes.
Right.
It's ridiculous. So when you walk it, I'm talking about on the street, how we got to live our life on the street. I can only know how I live my black life in my black skin and the hell that I've kept, and even not as much as some of my brothers and sisters who don't have the wherewithal or the resources that I've had through the God bless me of having the family and the community that I lived in. But for this guy to walk around, you're being disingenuous, yo. You're being disingenuous. Well, so when the Panther Party starts jumping off and you come in with the Forrest Gump stuff, it's time for you to get on out. You know what I'm saying? And I understand,
yeah,
and I'm down with you. I'm down with what you're saying, Bernie, but let's win. Let's win, yo.
Yeah.
We don't have that luxury that you got to be able to wait another 4 years. And I know you're
exactly.
from Vermont, and Vermont was the only state that voted for Jesse Jackson back in the day. Right on. But here's the thing. We need to win. And Joe gets us to that point. And for you to not to get out, and now you want to hang around to the debate, sure, that's you got to play it out, bruh. But after this debate, if stuff don't jump for you, and it's not going to jump, there's not a way to get on out and start campaigning for Joe if you're really walking like you're talking, or if you really, or unless you just want to have your own little, you're all in your own head, and you're all on your own jock strap, so to speak. I'm sorry, man.
That really kind of pisses me off. Yeah, well,
you
know, the thing that's going to be heading toward a confrontation between socialism and social democracy and capitalism is what's going on right at this very second. NCAA has canceled tournament audiences March Madness. Now, let's be honest and real. Why do they have March Madness? It's not to pay the athletes. This is putting millions of dollars into play, into corporate America, into the capitalist system. And you have NHL, NFL, NBA considering right here in Washington, D.C., the mayor shut down and says, we are recommending that no games or events that have over 1,000 people take place. So what does the NHL do in D.C., the Capitals? Oh, we're going to go ahead and open the doors for the public and play the games. See, capitalism has a price to pay because we all know their sin is playing cheap labor and then being given tax breaks to come into our communities. And who's paying for the infrastructure of the schools, the roads, the community to survive and sustain for the capitalist system to come in? Oh, it's nice to have your factory in my community, but then you're going to charge me the high prices. Once you make your stuff overseas, you're going to come back and stick it to me. And now we're going to see how much capitalism is really concerned with the citizens of its country. Because when you start watching these games and these TV shows, ain't got no audiences there, and you know that's cutting into the do-re-mi of marketing and public relations. And it's like, come on, y'all, we better be able to deal with this instantly because it's about to even get worse. You think this is bad now? Wait till start losing their income. Hey, they're not willing to give us a break at the door.
No. The NHL, that's a whole subject unto itself, right? Because who are the most of the people that watch the NHL? And who are most of the players in the NHL?
Beer drinking.
Yeah.
There you go. Come on.
And have you noticed that the NHL is almost play year-round? And why is that? Because when other sports are being overrun by other individuals, let's call them other individuals. I won't even call
other
what groups they look like. But when other sports are being overrun by other individuals and you're not looking like the Superman no more because you got to compete with everybody else because, you know, it ain't the 1930s no more where you're banning other people from being able to play and you're banning that competition. So what happens?
Right.
We need to have our sport where we look like the dominant ones, where we can beat a man. So let's extend the season of the NHL because there's too much basketball, there's too much football, there's too much baseball, there's too many images of them other folks looking like heroes and our young kids worshiping them. So let's make the NHL season a little bit longer, almost damn near year-round. So it makes sense what you're saying, that they decide we're going to keep the things open because, you know, they don't believe. They all believe Trump's zombies think it's a hoax.
Yeah.
I actually saw a reporter interviewing a woman somewhere who was a supporter, and this was last week, and she said, I think it's a Democratic hoax. I don't believe it. Now, you are a zombie.
Well, of course.
Because that means you're not paying attention to anything else in the world. You're not even relying on your own sense of right and wrong, your own sense of comprehension. And that's the tragedy. That is the tragedy, because these people, whatever they believe in, although it's wrong to us, they believe in something. And this guy believes in nothing other than pimping them. And, you know, hey, you get what you deserve, you know?
Yeah.
You get what you want. And if that's how they're going to roll, well, hey, just like I said, these cats that were making fun of the that were making fun of the coronavirus and all of the attention being paid to it and the media's blowing out of proportion, well, guess what? You guys messed around and got exposed to it, huh? So is the media still blowing it out of proportion? Do you kind of wish that you hadn't cut that funding, you know?
Well, you said something at the top of the show, Eric, which you say, God help us now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know what happened in Exodus when the plague was put on the Pharaoh's house.
Mm-hmm.
The Pharaoh's son died in the plague.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, mm-hmm. Now I'm telling you, God is still large in charge, and this individual in the White House said he was sent. He's the second coming. He can do this.
Oh,
and God's
going
to say, you know what? You know what? Since you know how to do this, wave your hand, Mr. Trump. That's right. Place your hand on the issue and create the miracle where you can say this virus will, once it heats up, it'll be gone in instant. And all of a sudden, your godliness, Mr. Trump, is exposed for being the charlatan that you are. Telling you, when you go back and read Exodus, the Pharaoh said the same thing. I don't know.
So let it be done.
God.
So let
them
shout out to you,
God.
Brenner. You, Brenner, shout out to you, Brenner. He was so great in that movie, Boy, The Ten Commandments.
Was,
so let it be done. So let it be written. I'm sorry. I just throw that out because Yule did his thing against
Moses. That's right.
Against
he said,
Charles.
I don't need your God. I am God. How are you, what are you talking about?
Right. Right. And I really think all this is happening for a reason, man. I mean, we saw the impeachment go downhill, and we saw other efforts, the Russian investigation. So there's got to be something that has got to solidly take this man out. And I believe that there's going to be, in addition to the vote, this is really what's stirring the pot, I think, because this affects everybody. It affects conservatives. It affects
a pestilence
liberals,
has
affects,
come across the land.
Know, please. Yeah. You know. And I think white folks out there took a bad, especially those flying out of New York, the same community that's affected gravely over here, are big time supporters of CPAC, you know, and I think that they needed to see. No one is immune from this. And look who's handling it. You know?
Right.
Look who's the chief cook. You know, so
all you have to do is look at his
body
posture, look at his body language.
Mm-hmm.
The body language. I mean, when you see the dude sitting and he's all got his arms wrapped around him, all extra tight. Some may write with him.
Yeah.
Man. Some may write with this dude. You know, and you guys all know. You know, I was like, hey, he's not that bad. I don't think he's nope was wrong. You straight racist, money, and everything. And everything you say, do, you know, only proves that. And every single one of these people that's down with him proves that as well. I went to a screening the other night, and a screening of a documentary called. I'm trying to find as I'm stumbling now because I'm trying to find the information about it. But basically, this was a documentary. That they showed at the New Jersey PAC Center, executive produced by Blair Underwood and narrated by him, a sister by the name of Deborah something Riley. And I'll come up with that information in a minute. But it was about the 1936 Olympics and the 17, they call them. You know, the 17 black athletes that were chosen to be part
of it. Jesse Owens
and this
woman, I guess, right?
Right, Jesse Owens was the star, but there was Ralph Metcalf, who later went on to be a congressman and was one of the founders of the Congressional Black Caucus. I believe a gentleman named Archie Williams Byron, yeah, you would know that better than I do, who went on to become one of the instructors for the Tuskegee Airmen. And they,
right,
they talk about the two sisters, Louise Stokes and Tidy something, and they were track stars. And it just talked about the obstacles, obviously, that were faced by these black athletes, even by some of the coaches trying to take them off the teams, and also,
yeah,
the experience of them going over there. It was really a good documentary. The sister actually said that she was going to do a documentary about this jazz, female jazz artist that happened to be over, mm-hmm, in Europe at the time, in Berlin at the time, when Hitler came through and put everybody in internment camps, and she was one of the few black, if not the only black person, that was swept up and put in the concentration camp. And it,
right,
was really a great documentary that needs to be seen. And Byron, you're familiar with the story of the 17 members of
I'm very familiar with it. I can't name them right now, but I
right,
know the story. And they indeed, not only when they went over to represent our country, but getting to the point where they were to represent, you may recall in the movie about Jesse Owens, that he basically was being confronted by the U.S. IOC, International Olympic Committee, and the president at the time wanted to ban black folks from participating in the Olympics and being as representatives of the United States. And ultimately, he was out over.
And that was Roosevelt, our great FDR. Right?
Well, it wasn't the president himself. It was Avery Bundage.
Avery Bundage was the president of, yeah.
Yeah, he was the president of U.S. Olympic Committee, and he's the one that didn't want blacks representing. And because our team that went was at the African-Americans who went, not only didn't get the full support of the United States, but when they went over and won, they actually got at least an acknowledgement from Adolf Hitler. And when they came back to the United States, they were once again subjected to the racism that was there before,
yeah,
they left, and even worse, they were mocked. They were actually mocked.
What was the movie about that?
There was a movie at one time. I think Dorian Harewood played Jesse Owens way back in the day.
Yes, he did.
And,
yeah,
and some of the hell that he caught. The name of this, I just found the information. The name of this film is Olympic Pride. Hold on, I just took my glasses off. Got to put them back on. Olympic Pride, American Prejudice. A 2017,
yeah,
NAACP Image Award nominee celebrates Tidy Pickett and Louise Stokes, the first,
yeah,
African-American women to represent the United States in the Olympic Games. Tidy and Louise, along with 16 African-American men, defied Hitler and Jim Crow to win hearts and medals at the 1936 Games Berlin. The writer-director's name is Deborah Riley Draper, and she had,
mm-hmm,
actually contacted Blair to be a narrator. And so,
mm-hmm,
when he heard about the project, he decided to executive produce it and help her. It's also a book that she's written. He's got kind of a ghost deal with a book publisher. And so, you know, he doesn't believe in doing the ghost deal. He just believes in giving people the props. So he made it possible for this sister's book to come out. And consequently, they did the film, which she had been researching for quite some time. And in the documentary, it also talks about how the voyage over, you know, the 10-day steamship ride, that a lot of the athletes kind of, you know, it was a different time. They felt the chains and the vibe of racism in America kind of didn't affect, because a lot of the athletes were getting along, you know, and they got past that. And incidentally, there were two Jewish guys that were on the track team, which they got treated horribly. They weren't able to run on that relay team with the two black guys.
That's right.
And they were replaced by some white guys. And it also talked about how Germany received, and like you said, Hitler made sure that the African Americans did not experience any racism. They were told the countryside to treat them the best, show them the best time. So when they were there, they really got treated quite well by them. And one of the guys talked about, even one of the SS officers invited him to his house for dinner, and him and a couple of guys went to this guy's house for dinner with this guy and his wife and his daughters. And so it was really an interesting and fantastic documentary. And whenever people get an opportunity, it's a new documentary. So we should go out and support this because it is another piece of our history. I'm one who likes to see all black history, especially in those days, and the images. And this footage that the sister said that she got was all footage that was cut out by the Olympic Committee. They cut out, when they did the newsreels and things, they cut out the parts about the black athletes. Because the woman who made the film was a German woman, a filmmaker.
Was a German woman, that's right.
And she convinced Hitler to document this. And so she included all of these things, but they cut it out. They cut out all the scenes. And also, I think Disney, of all people, and we know about Walt Disney, those of us that really know about Walt Disney, he had a lot of the footage, and it ended up being on the editing room floor. They wanted to cut out all the contributions of the African Americans, and she was able to get this footage, some of this footage that hadn't been seen before. And it was really a fantastic documentary, something that we all need to support.
That's very fascinating. I'd like to see it. You say that it's in private viewing right now.
I don't know what it is. I know that we're trying to see if we can get it as part of the Newark Film Festival here in Jersey.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was supposed to go to see a soldier's play to talk to Blair about it. I don't know now if we're going to be going due to the current situation. But it's something that, it's just another example of our history that's been denied from us for all these years to make us think that, that we're nothing. And
I got an interesting break for you. I got an update here. As of this afternoon, the Senate GOP blocks emergency paid sick leave bill from moving forward. There you have it.
Of course. Of course.
Wow.
So that speaks volumes to the so-called initiative from the Oval Office, where his GOP in the Senate can't even vote to move an emergency paid sick leave. Because it's already in play. Sick leave
is
already in play. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, when your nation's capital is in the shutdown mode that we're in right now, and the rest of the country doesn't even know this. They're clueless because they got their own situation to deal with. But the nation's capital, where you are, Wayne, the National Guard had been put into place.
By
the governor.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
And
exactly.
Here we are in the nation's capital where we got this same situation where school closures, they already told the University of Maryland shut down its campus and told them when they come back in 2 weeks. They come back in 2 weeks, go online, because there's no guarantee that the classrooms are going to be open. They've already canceled the March 17th Irish Day parade, the St. Patrick's Day parade. They're already talking about canceling the
They're not talking about – hold on. They're not talking about canceling the St. Patrick's Day parade here in New York, as last I heard.
No, I don't think so.
Believe me, it's on the list of considerations. And
I know, it's on the list, but as of earlier today, mid-afternoon, de Blasio had not confirmed that they were going to actually cancel it. And that was like earlier this afternoon, so who knows what has happened.
And down here they're canceling they're canceling the cherry blossom festivities.
That's
huge. That's huge in Washington. That's what I'm saying. The rest of the country is handling the best they can. God bless the governor of Washington, state of Washington, because his hands are full. I mean, literally full. And he's doing the right thing, but they don't have enough tests. CDC doesn't have enough tests to spread around. And you got the vice president saying, we got a million that's coming out. They're lying.
And you had the other guy talking about we got tests. Anybody wants tests, we can give it. Go ahead, Wayne. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I was just going to say, it's all about money. And I mean, as you guys were talking, I got a little tick on my computer here. And the minute I see MSK secured message for patient, I freak out, And sure
the minute
enough,
you see what? Say it again.
When I see among my emails, MSK secure, Memorial Sloan Kettering secured information, important message for a patient in Westchester, their patient. We wanted to inform you that a staff member at MSK Westchester has been diagnosed with COVID-19. We have been preparing for this situation, and our staff is moving quickly to get as many people who may have been exposed to come in. So here it is. I mean, not to get open and openly personal about this, because I think people need to get themselves checked. But, you know, here I just completed my last week of radiation, man. And to think that I got to come back up in that, you know, thank you. But now I got to go back.
Yeah.
Right. And you
now I
got
to go back to see. That's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's no test. I mean, I was in the city today. I had an audition, and I wasn't up close to people, you know. But just being that, I mean, my father is in that age bracket. My cousin, congressman, he's got health issues that put him in one of the categories. I mean, we were going to go to the Big East tournament this weekend at the Gardens, which was canceled.
Uh-huh.
We're planning on do a trip to the NCAA things.
Right.
So, you know, all of that stuff, you know, is out the window. And here these guys continue to lie about where we are. I mean, you know.
Yeah, like it's scary, man. It is freaking scary, you know. You just think that there would be some common sense and civility would prevail. But, you know, the guy's got to get out, you know. I mean, we have got to remove this man. He's got to be extricated from where he sits, you know. And I mean, the deal is I have my doubts about Biden because of the debate performances. I was, you know, even leaning towards Bloomberg at one point. Anybody, you know, it could have been anybody just to get rid of this person. But,
sure,
you know, hopefully
but the most recent debate,
we made some decisions.
Joe looked like he's getting in fight shape. Those most recent debates, people were talking about going after each other. But you need that. He needs those kind of, you know, primer fights, you know, because we need him to be there, to be at that place. And, you know, this is what's – this pandemic is what's causing those Americans who decided not to vote in the last election to come out and vote, because we all know that less than half the country, less than half the population came out and voted in the last presidential election. So now I think what's going to happen is that the turnout is going to be much greater because everybody realizes those clear-thinking people, the never-Trumper Republicans, realize that, we're going to go with Joe because this guy is willing to put everybody's life at risk for his own personal needs. And when you see him, that's why, you know, there's nothing like watching somebody and going to a movie and seeing for your own eyes, you know. Some people are not able to look objectively, obviously, because they're zombies. Trump zombies, I'm going to call them. But those that are able to look objectively and are free thinking and think for themselves, they can see that this man is not concerned about us. He's not concerned about anything other than as it relates to him.
Yes, that's it. That's it. And there has never been a president, you know, as far back as Washington, who's ever had exhibited anything of this nature. You know, I mean, We've lived among megalomaniacs, but, you know, I would say Hitler. Yeah. You know, I'm trying to think of some others that Mussolini. I mean, we've had people who have been, you know, eating their drapes, but the bottom line is this guy just takes the cake, you know.
Yeah.
He's just off the charts, and something's got to be done. And I really think they need to cancel this impending debate. As I said, I think Bernie should just bring it back to Brooklyn. Circle the wagons. If you really are a Democrat, you're going to do the thing. You're not going to pull what you did in 2016.
Right. He's already not doing it.
You know.
This is last minute. We got to go.
We can't afford that.
Well, you get the last one, Wayne, and we're getting ready to jump off here. Why don't you give the folks your sign off there, Brother Gilman, legendary newsman Wayne
keep
Gilman.
Keep hope alive. Just keep hope alive, man. That's it, you know. I got one storm, and I'm headed for another, but let's keep hope alive.
Amen.
God bless, my brother. Stay strong.
Amen.
See you again, legendary Wayne
you.
Gilman, the newsman. Talk to you soon. Brother Byron Saunders, a legendary historian.
Yes,
tell the people.
Peace and love always. Come on now. Y'all know y'all got the power. Use it. Vote like your life depends upon it. We are the majority. Remember that.
There it is. I know that's right. Brother Byron, we'll talk to you again next week, if not sooner.
Yes, sir.
All right. This has been the K. Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm Citizen Payne, the son of K. Thompson. And, You know, Mama's up there on assignment in heaven. God bless her. And my cousin Kim, my sister Gina. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm trying to get the music. The music always gives me a problem going out. I don't know why. But we'll see you again next week. There it is. Take care. K-Thompson Live, Block Talk Radio Network.